Good morning and welcome to the work session. Just making sure everyone's awake. It's 7:01 and Madam Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Mayor O'Neill.
Here.
Mr. Cleaworth.
Here.
Ms. Therrien and Ms. Sprinkle are excused today. Ms. Tidwell.
Here.
Mr. Marnie.
I'm here.
Mr. Ringstad.
We have a quorum. First up, we have Christoph Falk, who will give us a presentation on the building department. Good morning.
Good morning. Oh, wait, red means on. Yep. Good morning. I think I was called here mainly for this handout, you know, like what's being built, what's going on in the city limits. But I'd like to also talk a little bit on the tax rebate program. And I'd also like to mention the property maintenance code. We are adopting new codes, hopefully by the end of the year, you know, the new code cycle. And I'd like to talk about the property maintenance code just a little bit. We're not going to go in depth. In regard to all this blighted property stuff, maybe there's a way to simplify things. And then I'd also like to just, you know, mention the plumber's board. Also, I'd like to touch on that. Again, the main reason we're probably here is for the projects, but we'll talk about that last. So regarding the tax rebate program, I would say we've waived roughly to date about $150,000 in permit fees for this building season, yes. So. And when I come back again in a month or so, I'd like to talk about these things again when we're presenting the budget. So what I'd like to see is whatever the city attorney chart, whatever the correct term is, can we do away with the tax rebate program? It's due to sunset in 2027 unless the council extends it. But I'd like to do the opposite. Let's shorten it. But again, we don't need to go in depth on that. Any questions on that before I move on to my next point? So then my next one is the property maintenance code. I've only sort of started to dig into this code, and what it is so the building department, city of Fairbanks, we adopt building codes, and the vast majority of these building codes are published, produced by the International Code Council. So we adopt International Building Code, International Residential Code, International Mechanical Code, etc. But one of the codes that they publish is the Property Maintenance Code. And, you know, I think we've got a lot of stuff going on with the blighted here. We got a registry here, et cetera, et cetera. But why don't we base that into an actual published code like the building codes? And possibly it might streamline enforcement, and it's readily accessible. Not saying that our blighted ordinance isn't readily accessible. But it's kind of, you know, a common code. It would need to be amended, but that's typical of all building codes. We amend them because we don't want to end up like some suburbs in the lower 48 where you got to worry about dandelions and hide of grass. But that's that. That's all I wanted to mention there. So more to come on that. But then while we're on the topic of codes, I'd like to also talk about the International Residential Code. And on this next code cycle, I see a way of let's simplify the code of how we have the International Residential Code adopted, right? The whole idea is, hey, how do we help get more housing, right? How do we make the building process more streamlined? How do we make the permitting process more streamlined? So I'd like to see what we can do to streamline the International Residential Code. And specifically, we we don't quite adopt every section of that. We have people go and reference the other codes we adopt, such as the mechanical code, the plumbing code. Although we do allow the electrical code, you could just pick up the residential code and find out all the requirements for electrical just using the residential code. So that's the idea on that one. But why? Why do I bring that up? Why do I mention it? Because there is a national effort also. So what the folks, the ICC, you know, the ones that published the property maintenance code, they've hired folks to, how can they improve the residential code? And this is kind of like my diagram of like a thickness of a book. So they're trying to do this. Like how do they do this at a national level? So why is that? Because nationally housing, right? We're all kind of in the same boat or whatever. So that's all I have to say on that one. So then here's where I need some help from you folks and my predecessor, right, the one that came before me, I guess, if I also mentioned this, and it's a good thought, but and I know a few council members have talked about how do we, maybe there's an effort to look at boards, right? What are all these committees? What are all these boards and committees that the city has? Well, one of them that we have is the plumbers board. And I'm not sure why we have it, to be honest. I don't like to say that, to be honest. I'm always honest. But the one thing I don't say is low-key. All the kids are saying low-key. Low-key, how do we get rid of the plumbers board? And what is it? So how come we don't have an electrician's board? How come we don't have a mechanical board? How come we don't have a builder's board? So all it is we say if you're an electrician, you get your qualifications through the state. We can look that up. You're an electrical administrator through the state. We can issue you an electrical permit. You are going to do some HVAC work, or you're going to install a boiler. You're going to change to natural gas from oil. You have a mechanical permit. You are a mechanical administrator through the state. We issue a mechanical permit. Likewise for a building permit. But when it comes to a plumbing permit, we say no. Even though you're a mechanical administrator through the state, you're qualified to do plumbing through the state, you need to be a master plumber through the city. Now, I know that it used to be a lot more robust of a program, so I've heard, and I think it even dates back to the 70s. But all it is to be a master plumber, you get your qualifications through the state, you come here and you take a test on our amendment. Right, we adopt the Uniform Plumbing Code, but how do we adopt any code? We have our amendments. There it is. So this is a test just on amendments. Why aren't we requiring builders? Why aren't we requiring architects? Why aren't we requiring engineers? Why aren't we requiring electricians to take a test on our amendments? So all it is you take amendments. Now, granted, it does bring in $7,000 roughly a year because we charge these master plumbers $200 every 2 years. It does cost us a little bit for food because there's always a meeting. So we buy food, we have a meeting. But that one confuses me because the amendments are readily accessible. You go look them up. Everybody needs to know them. And I'm sure I could pass the plumber's exam if it's just on the amendments. So that's all I have to say about that one. And I think it would help the clerk's office, right? It's not for the building department, it's for the clerks. So to get rid of the board, you know, we got too many, right? Because then what do? We keep changing the requirements to be on this board. We can't find anybody that lives in the city who is this type of plumber, or who lives in the city who is a master plumber. So then we change the requirements. Okay, we make it fewer people have to be city residents. So let's get rid of some of this stuff and simplify things. So before I get to this sheet that I handed out, any questions? Okay.
On the property maintenance code that you're talking about, so that's an international code that we don't currently adopt?
Correct.
Could you maybe just email, like, I'm assuming that's a big book.
No.
Is it small?
Yeah.
Could you maybe send a link so we can see it?
Yes. So all these ICC codes are free online, and like any other business motivated, you know, you always have to pay more to get a little more. So they got their business model, but by the basic code itself is available for free online. But they do publish quite a few. We don't adopt all of them. So it's not strange that we don't adopt the property maintenance, because we don't adopt the swimming pool. We don't adopt the zoning. We don't. There's various others. Sorry, kind of answering that question too long. Any other questions?
Thank you for the presentation. You know, I like a lot of your ideas and the combination of things. We did eliminate a board in the building department some years back. Something to do with landscaping commission was redundant with other things that we were doing. You raise a good question with the plumbers board. Why one and not the others? Doesn't make a lot of sense. In the past, it seems like when we got the updates of the national codes, we got these thick packets here, and I'm not sure anyone ever really read them. And we just adopted it, hoping Clem was doing the right thing. But you have the right to take that and modify it if you wanted to, right?
Yes. So the thick packets I'm assuming you got were probably the changes or amendments. There's also a process. There is a board that we probably shouldn't eliminate, but it's still the review board, and we present to them and we get feedback before we present to the council the proposed amendments and adoptions.
Okay. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
All right. Let's go to the project.
I know, taking up too much time. It's already 15 after. Well, so projects finishing up, and again, I probably are missing a few, and so just let me know. So I have the Fulford office building warehouse. They're Fulford Electric, big electrical company. They're doing good at the old Holmes greenhouse. They've converted to office, and now they're doing a bunch of warehouses, cleaning up the property too. Not that it was a mess. Thrifty Liquor, they're building a new gas station there. The gas station part should be finishing up. So then they're going to hurry up and move all the liquor into the gas station and then tear down the old liquor store. Hopefully, fingers crossed. But, you know, we're never that lucky to get buildings torn down or properties cleaned up. Then we got the Mattson office. What is that? That's just really a large yard next to the I want to say Carlisle. It's not Carlisle. They're on the Old Rich. The initial phase is a small office, but really they're just more or less have a lay-down yard. But in the future, they might build a larger warehouse type there. Big Dipper structural repairs. If anyone was wondering what the heck are they doing up there, they're upgrading the seismic. Doesn't seem like a lot of work, but there was a high-value project, you know. In the millions of dollars. FNSB, new animal shelter. They've got all the underground plumbing done. They're getting very close to getting underground electrical, so hopefully they'll be pouring concrete soon because it's going to freeze, and the clerk's office is going to be upset. 12-plex, 26th Avenue, finishing up a 12-plex there, which is great because if you look to the 2027 perspective projects, they are also going to build two more 12-plexes, which they've already started. That is Prince Properties, yep. And then three new single-family dwellings. There's a new duplex and then two new triplexes. So for the 2027 perspective projects, What I didn't list here is the Barnett Street Garage. Those folks, the architects, designers, have already been reached out. I haven't seen any drawings other than the preliminary, but they seem to be getting after it as far as design goes. So hopefully construction bids come in, budget. City Attorney Chard, I know you're very interested in that one. So for next year, I really think as far as permit fees go, hopefully the hospital will be keeping us afloat. They have two projects which are significant dollar value, the fourth floor and then one level below them, the third floor. Alaska Blonde Restaurant at the Northward Building, I don't know if you've noticed, they painted it, but there's actually going to be a restaurant there at the corner. Hopefully that makes it in construction budget. That'll be a nice addition. Fairbanks Fast Cash. Unlike my presentation here, they are fast cash. Roman's Way, where's Roman's Way? Hopefully everyone knows where that is. That's Old Rich. But if you ever drive on the New Rich, you might see large signs saying fast cash, possibly. I don't know what they say. Maybe the letter's too big, I can't read it. But they're going to even try to get a larger sign that you can read from North Pole. I don't know how they're going to pull that off. Birch Hill Multipurpose Building, I really have my fingers crossed. Not a very large project, but I think it would be a nice addition up there. What's that? Oh, no, that's believe it or not, the cross country trails, or is it called Nordic? I apologize. Up there that's all city limits. Presbyterian Hospitality House, I think they are actually going to pull it off this year. They're working really hard to tighten up the scope of work to get it within budget. I know, I'm going past 15 minutes. Two triplexes, Prince Properties, they're building one. And these were a pretty big hit on permit fees, right? The tax rebate program, that was a doozy. Hotel, I always get phone calls about a hotel, but I never see anything. And this is over kind of where the DMV, where the Raising Cane's, who have yet to put a single chicken finger out the door, I guess, or maybe drive-through window. Starter Block, old Polaris site. Maybe. But maybe we can change the agreement. I don't know if you have permit fee waivers in here or not, but maybe we could strike that out. I think someone was trying. I didn't read the RFP. There you go. I think the hospital will hopefully keep us afloat. So then next year, we're just assuming, there's going to be hopefully, there's seven total this year. Hopefully we have a similar amount as far as duplexes, triplexes, single family homes. The remodels, the Fairbanks Neighborhood Housing Grants, that has spurred a lot of activity. I don't have any of those remodel projects on here, but that is good. That's done a lot of, excitement. And I have yet to see one completed in the city limits, but I think it's not going to be too long. Everybody's familiar with that program. And future projects, I mean, these have been on the list forever. I don't know if GVA is ever going to do that new BESS, the battery storage. TCC Wellness and Recreation Center, that would be awesome. They're at the old Captain Bartlett Inn site. And north of the Johansson, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services and Visitor Center. That would be a really good addition to Fairbanks. But I think that's very far away from happening. Sorry I took so long.
Thanks for your presentation.
Thank you.
Are there any questions? Mr. Marnie?
Well, I drove by on Pegger the other day by the surgery center. There's a new building popping up.
Yeah.
You know what that is?
I don't.
Okay.
It's out of the limits, out of city limits.
Okay.
Yeah. It's what?
Ms. Tidwell.
On the 455 3rd Alaska Blonde Restaurant, you said you hope that makes it into the budget. Are you just talking about their budget?
Yeah, their budget. I'm talking about their budget, yeah.
Okay.
Their budget,
great.
Yeah. I'm sure something will be built. I don't know if the initial vision will be built.
Okay, any final questions for Christoph before we go? Thanks for that presentation.
You're welcome. That's my strategy.
All right, moving on to item 3, a resolution adopting the City of Fairbanks Records Retention Schedule version 2.0. And we have Alana to come up here. Good morning, Ms. Wasselius.
Good morning. My name is Elena Wasselius. My attachment is the newly revised City of Fairbanks Records Retention Schedule. Let's begin with an excerpt from a web article, The History of Records Management, from UK company Access Records Management. Over a century ago, attitudes and processes were far less methodical, and the records were retained in haphazard fashion, if at all. Changing laws, technologies, and the needs of an increasingly interconnected world have spurred businesses and governments to improve their records management systems in recent decades. For the city, 2002 Resolution 3999, the initial records management program under the direction of the city clerk with advice of the city attorney was passed and approved to temporarily use the State of Alaska Local Government General Records Retention Schedule until a specific one was finalized and approved. That model has good information to begin a program, but it's too broad and vague. Nonetheless, until a specific city one was finalized and approved, hung in the air until 2016, Resolution 4724, the city's first custom-tailored retention schedule. The purpose, to increase the efficiency, the accountability of city government through the orderly administration of public records, to safeguard the history of the city, to increase storage space, and ensure compliance with federal, state, and local laws regarding records retention. Forming goals of 5-year updates after this resolution was a huge undertaking. With numerous attempts without another expert, the goals became immobile and remained on the back burner. During the creation of the 2024 proposed budget, the city clerk's office number one objective stated, make significant progress on backlog of records management duties. In late 2023, the City Council recognized the importance of records management and funded a new records manager position starting in 2024. I've been serving the City of Fairbanks for over 2 years. I moved from Washington State to Alaska a week and a half before my April 1st start date. Equipped with years of knowledge and expertise, I hit the ground running and dove in to learn about this City of Fairbanks, its business and records program. As soon as I was fairly acquainted with the 2016 schedule as my guide, I coordinated meetings with each department head to clarify and understand each of their needs and cover any gaps that presented themselves. Generating a clearer and more robust records series and descriptions. After, I researched specific department laws ensuring compliance where necessary. During this adventure, an unexpected bonus was the ability to attend conferences and meetings in my field. 2024 and 25 ARMA Infocons, known as ARMA International after its discontinued use of acronym Association of Records Managers and Administration. Infocon is Information Conference. Plus this year's Archives Records 2026 and the Society of American Archivists 90th Annual Meeting. These experiences helped assist the Golden Heart City to be up to date with current best practices and continue to stay informed with an ever-changing industry. Thank you, City Council, for supporting education and training for the City Clerk's Office staff. Now, 2026, under the direction and edits of the City Clerk, with advice of the City Attorney, the record of a gratifying journey from the groundwork of that first custom-tailored retention schedule, now 2.0. Moreover, the objective to make significant progress on backlog of records management duties achieves noteworthy advancement on this monumental task.
Thank you for your presentation and for that background. That's really interesting stuff. Are there any questions on the retention program? It's like Mr. Cleworth has one.
Just one. The old MUS records, are we legally obligated to keep all that stuff, or how does that work?
No. Since the MUS was purchased and sold to another company, that company should hold the records for MUS as the new owner.
That's a relief.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions for? Okay. Great. Thank you for your presentation. Thanks for this work. I know that that's a lot of tedious work and detail. So, over 45 pages of retention plan isn't an easy feat. So, thank you for that.
Thank you.
Great. All right, item four, we have a resolution adopting the multi-jurisdictional hazard mitigation plan as the official mitigation plan of the City of Fairbanks pending FMA approval. And good morning. From the borough, we have Ms. Means.
Good morning, Mayor and Council members. Thank you for the opportunity to provide an overview for the 2026 multi-jurisdictional hazard mitigation plan update. This plan was developed jointly with the Fairbanks North Star Borough, City of Fairbanks, and City of North Pole, along with our stakeholders and subject matter experts. Today, I'll briefly discuss what's new in the update, key findings, mitigation priorities, and adoption processes. And how do I advance? Oh, thank you. The purpose of today's work session is fourfold. First, to provide a high-level overview of the 26 update. Second, to explain major changes since the 2021 plan. And then third, to highlight the key mitigation priorities identified through the planning process. And finally, to explain adoption requirements and next steps before formal approval. This update looks different from previous plans because both FEMA and the state of Alaska have increased their regulations and requirements. The new guidance places greater emphasis on implementation, resilience, and demonstrating how mitigation is integrated into local decision making. New analyses were added to address infrastructure lifelines, supply chain resilience, social vulnerability, community-wide fire spread potential, and the impacts of permafrost degradation and change in future conditions. These additions help make the plan more useful as a planning and funding tool while ensuring continued FEMA compliance. For the City of Fairbanks specifically, several new assessments were conducted. The plan includes an urban conflagration analysis, which examines the risk of structure-to-structure fire spread in developed areas. Critical facility assessments were expanded to evaluate key community assets more thoroughly. We also added infrastructure lifeline analysis to better understand dependencies among transportation, utilities, communications, and emergency services. Finally, wildfire and flood risk assessments were updated using current data and conditions. The risk assessment continues to identify wildfire, severe weather, flooding, earthquakes, and ground failure, which includes the permafrost impacts as the primary hazards affecting our region. The plan evaluates potential impacts to residents, infrastructure, critical facilities, utilities, emergency services, and other community systems. To address these risks, the plan establishes 6 mitigation goals and 28 mitigation actions. Each action identifies responsible agencies and provides a framework for future implementation and funding opportunities. Examples of priority mitigation actions include strengthening backup power capabilities at critical facilities, improving coordination on flood mitigation efforts, expanding infrastructure resilience projects, enhancing emergency access routes, reducing wildfire fuels, and improving hazard mapping and risk information. These actions are intended to reduce risk before disasters occur rather than responding after losses have already happened. Their overall focus remains protecting life, maintaining critical services, improving resilience, and strengthening coordination among partner agencies. This is arguably the most important slide in this presentation. Adoption of the plan is required to maintain eligibility for FEMA mitigation grant programs, including the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program and Flood Mitigation Assistance Program. Without an approved FEMA-compliant hazard mitigation plan, the city may become ineligible for many hazard mitigation funding opportunities. Importantly, adoption does not approve projects, create regulations, or commit any future funding. It simply preserves eligibility for future grant opportunities and demonstrates a commitment to reduction of risk. A significant amount of public outreach was conducted during this update. The planning process included public surveys, public meetings, open houses, and a formal public comment period. Since adoption of the 21 plan, mitigation strategies have been integrated into emergency management and wildfire planning efforts, including the Comprehensive Emergency Management Plan and Community Wildfire Protection Plan. The region has also expanded wildfire mitigation activities, improved preparedness capabilities, and advanced multiple resilience and grant-funded projects. These accomplishments demonstrate that the plan is actively used and not simply a planning document on a shelf. The planning process is near completion. The state of Alaska has completed its review on the August 4th. The Planning Commission has recommended adoption to the Assembly on the 28th of July. And then following local approvals, last night the City of North Pole adopted the plan at their hearing. And then we have continued with the City of Fairbanks, and then the Assembly will be next week for the public hearings. Assuming all approvals are complete, FEMA's review is expected to conclude later this fall, well, later, hopefully the beginning of next month, and then that will result in the fully approved plan for the next five-year cycle. These are some of the most common questions we receive. Does this plan create new regulations? No. Does adoption commit future funding? No. Can projects change over time? Yes. Can additional projects be added in the future? Definitely. The plan is reviewed regularly and updated periodically to reflect changing conditions, priorities, and opportunities. In short, this document provides a framework for risk reduction without creating new mandates. And we will be meeting annually to discuss those small changes and mitigation actions. For anybody interested in reviewing the full document, draft materials, and supporting information are all available on the Emergency Management Plan webpage. It was just updated yesterday, so everything's new and current on there. The website includes the draft plan, supporting documents, public participation materials, and all the additional information for the planning process. We encourage both elected officials and members of the public to review the plan and provide any feedback prior to the final approval. This concludes my presentation, and I'd like to recognize my emergency management team and our planning partners who contributed to this update and helped ensure compliance with FEMA and state requirements. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I'll be happy to answer any questions regarding the plan, its findings, implementation strategies, or the adoption process.
Thank you for your presentation and for all the work that goes into a big plan like this. Are there any questions or comments? Any concerns about the mitigation plan as presented before we see it next week? No? Easy peasy.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Have a great day.
Bye. All right, item 5, discussion on the RFP number 2609, sale and redevelopment at 123 Lacey Street. I'll hand that over to Mr. Sanders.
All right. Good morning, Council. So we had to extend the evaluation committee from completing on Friday to completing yesterday, so that's why you're just now getting this, is I didn't get the results until yesterday afternoon. There were a few different issues with the RFP the way it was written, but I think we've made it through those pretty well, at least enough to bring it to your attention. So there were two of the threshold requirements that the City Council had stated that we had to make a ruling on to continue the evaluation. I just made the call that we were going to continue the evaluation and bring it to you, and then if you guys wanted to kick the project back, you can. But I had the evaluation committee go through the entire evaluation as if it had met the two threshold requirements that you had stated. The two of them were no permanent at-grade surface parking on the City West lot. This project has diagonal parking on Lacey Street. It's just a few spots. The evaluation committee was a little torn on it, or whether or not they even liked the parking there or not. But again, I thought this was something that I thought your intent from all the meetings that we had on this was for the West not to become a parking lot. I don't think this becomes a parking lot. It just adds some diagonal parking on Lacey Street. So I had the committee go ahead and evaluate it as if it had met the threshold, even though it, by the letter didn't. The other one was for you wanted construction to begin within 12 months. This evaluation or this proposal does not state exactly when the construction will begin. It's dependent on low-income tax credits. So that can be a little bit of a lengthy process. Also, that it needed to be clearly defined as to when that 12 months starts, on our end, which it wasn't. So that's another one of the thresholds that I told the evaluation committee to go ahead and act as if they had met the threshold, and that we'd bring it to the City Council. For the most part, the evaluation committee, with those two exceptions, the evaluation committee thought that this proposal was good enough to move forward, to go into negotiations. That's their recommendation to you. They had some concerns. The concerns were kind of all over the place. There were a few folks that were worried about it relying so heavily on low-income tax credits, just because that's not a guaranteed source of income for construction. Or source of revenue for construction. I personally thought that the $425,000 that they're offering the city seems a bit low for that much space. It's $10.17 a square foot for just a little over an acre. They also had an estimate of $6,000 in property taxes. There was a couple folks that thought that estimate was probably low. They didn't really touch on their on winter operations, and that was it as far as the concerns. Some of the things that they were excited about, though, was that it's got retail on ground floor, and it's got housing on the floors above it, and then on the City East, that will be a new spot for Fairbanks Neighborhood Housing Services. So everybody was, it's mostly housing on that side, so everybody was excited about the number of units that was bringing. And overall, the evaluation committee thought that this was, again, something worth pursuing, that the evaluation was, or that the proposal was fine for us to move forward. Is there any questions?
Ms. Marnie.
What's the next step, Mike?
The next step is, I guess we'll give. I mean, really, it's the ball's in the City Council's court at this point. You just got it today, so I assume that it's going to take a little bit for you to review it, and then, we'll start talking to the team that proposed this, and go from there.
Thank you.
Certainly worth.
Mike, looking at the diagram, at the picture here. You're talking about the diagonal parking there.
Yes.
Would the through lane be a north? I assume is a north lane then, huh?
Yeah. That's Lacey Street that you're looking at right there.
So, yeah. Would it be one north lane then?
I mean, it looks like they've got it going north and south on Lacey, but the they're just doing diagonal parking closest to the building.
You think there's enough right-of-way to do that? I don't think there is, but.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's one thing that I would need to have some clarification on. So. Yeah. Anyway, good.
Yeah, and this is, you know, obviously this isn't you wouldn't get a complete construction packet that's only 57 pages long. This is just their proposal. I mean, if this was the real thing, it would be, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pages. So this is just a concept.
Just getting this, and the answers are probably in here, but I was just going to ask you since you probably know. Does that mean that these residences are low-income residences, if they're looking for low-income tax credits?
They'll have to have some low-income tax credit or some low-income property units in there to get the low-income tax credit. I don't remember the exact percentage. There's two different types of low-income tax credits, so it really depends on which type they're able to. They're trying to go for the more lucrative one, which is 9%, which would make, I believe, 9% of the units have to be low income, but that's it's competitive, so there's no guarantee. I think that it'll depend on what they get.
So they're rental units?
Yes.
Okay.
So what's the bar for being low income? I mean, annual salary wise, or is that, how do they grade that?
I would have to look. I mean, let's see what the latest for AHFC is. It's usually like, it's a percentage of the annual median income. So I don't remember exactly what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, thank you.
It's determined by HUD. I don't remember what it is.
Right, yeah. I haven't looked at that stuff in 5 years. So. Yeah.
Any other questions, comments, discussion?
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to permanent fund investment strategy with Ms. Bell.
Thank you, Mayor, and good morning, everyone. I wanted to update you at the request of Ms. Therrien on the permanent fund meetings to discuss council requests to target returns of 8 to 9%. This report is an excerpt from our June report that was presented, prepared by our investment manager, APCM, Alaska Permanent Capital Management. On the second page, before we begin any discussions on changes in investments, the board always reviews the city code for the purpose and goals, which is to preserve principal and maintain purchasing power. So that is always in the forefront of their mind when they review any different type of strategies. On when the board received the information that the council would like for them to target returns of 8 to 9%. And during their April meeting, they reviewed, the first question that came to mind was, what is the riskiest portfolio we can hold before we stop being paid for the risk? So there is something that we have to consider with the constraints that we have. So our investment managers, they kind of started with the council request of a targeted return of 8 to 9%. They reviewed what the portfolio is doing to date in regards to the national, and the national return is 7.3%. So our request, the council's request of 8 to 9% is above that norm. And they also thought about the constraints. Our code at this time does not allow private equity or private credit, so they have to think about that. And, of course, their concern is, can we, the more stock exposure that we have, it at some point in time, it could stop being a reward for the portfolio. As of June the 30th, the annualized account return was 8.13%. So with our current model, we were actually achieving that 8 to 9%. And since inception, as of June the 30th, we were at 6.11%. The model that APCM presented that would give us a 7.3% return, which is within what we are allowed to invest in, pushes more into what they call, right now we're on what they call a Model 6, and then what they're proposing is what they're call a Model 8. And what that Model 8 would do would put 7% more into stocks. It would reduce 11% of bonds, and it would push about 4% more into what we call alternatives like commodities and real estate investment assets. So with that in mind, the APCM reviewed presented what they called a simulation. If we move into the from our current model into this model that pushes more into stocks, which was the request at our meeting in February, they kind of gave us the worst case scenario and the best case scenario. And looking at what would happen in the middle, they project that as we move into probably 2035, we can look at draws of over $10 million from the portfolio. But as we look at, I don't know if you have your packet there, and if you go to that last page. So based on our investment manager's review of this new model and new format, they had four takeaways from their analysis. The first of all, they felt that the current portfolio was already efficient. The second that they came away is that moving, shifting to a Model 8, which would shift more into stocks, you know, would lead us to a step of what we would call an annualized return of 7.3%, which is more in line with what they consider our peers. And then third, we have to consider pushing to 95 to 100% stocks will add risk, but may not necessarily match the reward that we're looking for. And the fourth, they felt that the current allocation is in line with the code and that it would give us targeted returns of 6.75% or more. However, the Permanent Farm Board at the last meeting in June requested some five-year statistics. What does it look like? What would we lose in bond revenue, interest income from the last 5 years if we move into the shift into this model, which would put more into stocks? And they also wanted to look at what would have the what would the fund have been if we were more aggressive in our stock investments for the last 5 years. So in October, they'll meet October the 28th, and they'll continue the discussion whether or not there's shift from a Model 6 to a Model 8. But with the returns that we had on June 30th being since we diversified the portfolio and it's at 8.13%, our investment managers feel that we should stay with our Model 6 of what we currently have. But the board is looking at being a little bit more aggressive in the stock in response to the request from the council. So this is an update, and we'll keep you informed. At this point in time, any changes that the Permanent Fund Board, a review board makes, it will not require any changes to the code, but we will keep you informed on the decision of that board. And that's our update, my update.
Thank you for that update. Any questions? No questions for you this morning. Thank you. Okay, next is the Finance Committee report. Back to you.
Hey, the Finance Committee will be meeting next week, next Thursday at 7 a.m. They will be reviewing the July 31st financial statements. We'll take a look at the long-range financial projections. We reviewed that at the last meeting, but we're going to take another look at that with some of the target-based budgeted numbers that we have at this time. And at my request, again, I would like for them to look at the capital fund guidelines. So we'll be looking at the capital fund guidelines. So our meeting will be next Thursday at 7 a.m. in the Meeks Conference Room to review those topics.
Any questions? Okay, Next, we're at mayor and council member comments. Start with Mr. Ringstad. Mr. Marnie.
Well, to kind of give the council and the administration an update, Ms. Tidwell, Ms. Sprinkle, and myself met with the city attorney and the city clerk, Ms. Snyder, yesterday concerning a project that we wish to pursue as far as the, I'm going to call it the Clay Street Cemetery neighborhood. And we came up with an alternate plan. We're going to come at it at a different direction. I just wanted to keep the council aware that it's not gone away. It's just changed its way we're going to attack it. Probably attack is not the right word, but how we're going to make that neighborhood a better place to live.
Is it in the form of an ordinance or an
activity? Yes, ma'am.
Look forward to seeing that. Thanks for your work on that. Ms. Tidwell.
I just hope that everybody remembers to vote today.
It is voting day. Right. And Mr. Cleworth.
Thank you, Mayor. Just three quick things. Lacey Street, when is that going to be reopened? Do we know at all?
We don't know yet.
Okay. I'm getting a lot of comments downtown wondering when we're reopening it, and I don't have an answer, and I'd like to be able to give them an answer.
The initial proposal was that we would close it for 12 months so we could also see how that's being used in the wintertime. That was how we originally thought about it.
Okay. Personally, I'm not in favor of doing that. Downtown, they've... Yeah, the buses and all of that difficulty making the whole round trip instead of using Lacey Street, and it's caused some problems. So if the plan is to keep it open, then for us to change that, it would require a resolution then or something, I would assume.
If it was permanent.
I'll look into it. but I'd like to see it opened again before the snow flies. This e-moto thing, is the police department working on that, or are they kind of waiting for us, or what's the status on that?
We have a meeting on it this Friday with the police department.
Okay, good.
And internally, yep.
Yeah.
And then it'll probably start to span out to the borough and the troopers.
Okay, yeah, I appreciate it. I just don't want to drop the ball on that if we can. I'm working with a city attorney on an ordinance on public nuisances, as we talked about in prior meetings. And we were hoping to have something here by this morning, but that didn't quite work out. I don't think we'll have something for Monday night either, so it'll probably be on the next work session. But we're working on it as quick as we can. So just to give you a heads up on that. That's it. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Our next regular work session is Tuesday, September 8th at 7 a.m. At 7:55, we're adjourned.